Another torpedo leaped from the little gunboats, but this time it struck wood. The watery blast ripped open a hole in a pirate ship large enough to drive a Hummer through. The sea poured into the vessel, men scrambling to reach the lifeboats, the cannons on the slanting deck still thundering as the pirate ship quickly began to sink. More torpedoes plowed right by the moving pirate ships, never altering their course by a hair. Yet the much smaller rockets would swing across the harbor to impact directly onto a cannon emplacement hidden in the brick wall.
How the hell can they do that? It just isn't possible that the Lord Baron has working computer guidance systems.
The black powder rockets? No way!
Maybe alive.
Whoever wins, we better be long gone when the smoke clears.
Hal, this tub's slower than hell. They don't have to sink us. They can pull alongside and throw rocks.
The scope okay, JB?
Sure.
Find the damaged PT, the one without the wheelhouse. Should be on the opposite shore somewhere.
Digging the Navy brass from his backpack, JB swept the distant shore until locating the vessel. Straight across the harbor, the damaged PT had finally reached shore, going straight across the short runoff from the lagoon near the waterfall and plowing into the soft sand. The boat stopped traveling, but rocked back and forth as the spinning props still tried to force the vessel onward.
Bingo. She's in the lagoon. Motor's still running.
There's our right home. And the boiler will provide the copper tubing we need. Grab your stuff. We have to run for it through the trees.
In front of the Ville?
Not going anywhere, Outlander. Everybody freeze. Sorry, Baron, but we need you to barter for our lives. You die, or we do. No choice there.
There's always a choice, Armstein.
Christy suddenly dove for the deck. As she got out of the way, the rest of the companions cut loose with their blasters. The Zek men were torn apart by the fusillade of rounds, their flintlocks discharging wildly into the sky as they fell.
Let's go.
Hopping over the side of the craft, they splashed into the water and waded to the shore, using the trawler as cover. Sprinting along the dead tree, the companions made it into the bushes just as the fishing boat broke in two, a cannonball punching straight through its old hull and disappearing into the breach.
So how are we going to do this? We sure as hell can't run across the front. We'll be mowed down by both sides.
That fire is coming mighty close.
Doc pointed to the growing conflagration on the mountainside.
Will it burn down the Ville?
Wall too thick.
We go around the back.
Ryan switched the Sig Sauer from his right hand to the left. Just the short run from the boat had opened the shallow knife wound, and he nearly dropped the blaster in the slick blood.
Yeah. Around the Ville there are fields cleared for plenty crops. We'll move a lot faster on flat ground. We should be able to outdistance the flames. At least nobody's going to be shooting at us in that direction.
Let's get going.
The companions raced deeper into the thick growth. Moving parallel to the beach, they used knives to cut and hack a path through the dense foliage. Monkeys screamed at the intrusion, and something large thumped out of their way, never to be seen. Masked by the vines and banyan trees, the companions could hear the thunder of the cannons mixed with the whoosh of firebirds streaking by overhead, and the occasional crash of a direct hit. As the plants thinned, the Ville came into sight, and they could now hear the civilians screaming and blasters firing non-stop. Rioting had to have seized the Ville, old scores being settled permanently while there was no Baron to level justice.
Stoops, doing pirate's work for them.
Following along the base of the brick wall, they went behind the Ville and started to run across the smooth fields. In passing, Ryan noted there were only a few cannons sticking out of the wall on this side, and nobody was walking the palisades. All eyes were on the big fight in the harbor. Sinking up to their knees in a muddy irrigation ditch, the companions half expected to hear the whip-crack report of a flintlock firing, but they reached the other side and took refuge behind a bamboo tool shed in the middle of the open expanse without incident. They paused to catch their breath, and canteens were passed around.
Thought jungles were wet, so what's burning?
Moist on top. Underneath, it's all dead leaves. And once it gets hot enough, everything will burn, even the green wood and moss.
We must be wary of a stampede. The fire will chase out all the animals. It would be very bad indeed.
For the locals, not us.
Walking over, Mildred took Ryan by the hand and poured water on the cut to clean it for inspection.
Got to bandage that now. Deeper than it looks.
Once we're at sea. No time now.
Suit yourself.
JB, Doc, cover me. We should check the tool shed.
With the others flanking him for support, Ryan clumsily drew the weapon with his left hand and kicked open the door. There were no SEC men inside, only some chained slaves dressed in tattered rags. The skinny prisoners cried out in terror at the sight of the armed people and huddled together whimpering. After making sure no SEC man was hiding in their midst, Ryan started to leave, then turned around and fired. The 9mm slug blew the lock off the long chain looping through their ankle cuffs.
Head to the north!
The prisoners dashed away, going in every direction. Some headed straight toward the approaching jungle fire.
Why, Dad?
They'll confuse our trail.
Oh, yeah, right.
A minute later, they started across the fields once more when a slave stumbled back from the greenery, his face split in two, eyes and brain sluggishly flowing from his ghastly head wound. Then swarms of the tentacled muties came shambling out of the trees, hooting madly.
Stickies!
Each sticky was armed with a stone axe, the shaft attached to the right arm with the layers of vines tied in place. Across each of their chests was a crude shield of bamboo wrapped with leather straps. A new group had joined the battle for Cold Harborville, and their bizarre army was coming straight for the Norms.
Aim for their heads!
Ryan switched to his right hand and winced every time he fired. Blood dribbled from his hand, but the man refused to slow or stop. Stickies fell, but more replaced them.
Shit! There's too many!
Ryan fired non-stop, killing with every round, but the man was becoming pale, his sleeve red with blood.
Use the grins!
While JB and Mildred maintained fire, the rest of the companions dug the black powder grins from their pockets, pulled the pins, and threw. Then they wisely ducked, not knowing how well the reloads would work. Two of the charges exploded in the air.
Shit!
Everybody was showered with hot steel. Doc felt a tug on his frock coat from passing shrapnel. Jack jerked as a piece of the shattered casing hit his jacket that failed to penetrate the razor blades hidden inside the lapels. He muttered something and threw the other repaired grin as far as possible, without pulling the pin first. Bleeding from 100 wounds, the stickies broke their charge and stood dumbly picking at the wounds. Two more grins hit the ground and did nothing, but the last three finally detonated. Pieces of muties blew skyward. Startled and frightened, the stickies started attacking one another, and the chaos soon spread until the fields were filled with the creatures hacking each other to bits with the stone axes. Rummaging in his munitions bag, JB unearthed two real grins and used them to clear a gory path through the infighting. Running and shooting, the companions reached the trees again and stopped to chill some stickies coming after them. When it was clear, they continued for the lagoon, leaping over the exposed roots and ducking under low-hanging limbs. Cannon fire from the harbor could still be heard, but it was more sporadic. The battle was being won by somebody. Not good news. Finally reaching the beach, they dashed for the trembling PT boat and hoisted one another onto the deck. Ryan went straight for the big 50-caliber machine gun and needed both hands to work the arming bolt. A lone sticky appeared from the trees, appearing mostly confused, and he tore it apart with a short burst.
Get this crate moving!
JB stood at the ruin of the wheelhouse, the broken remains of the wall rising no higher than a foot. The captain's chair was gone, as were the control board and steering wheel. A few wires were sticking from the deck. Walking halfway down the short flight of steps that led to the lower level, he twisted two of the wires together and nothing happened. Shit, no electric gears. They had to be manual.
Mildred, flashlight! Find the transmission and put this thing into neutral before we blow a gear!
JB pried away boards with his hands. Mildred darted below, flashlight in hand. A few seconds later, the craft stopped trembling as the propellers were disengaged.
Way to go, Mildred.
Finding a yoke with taut cables attached, JB tried to shift its position, and there was some reaction at the stern of the boat, but not enough. No time for repairs.
Doc, I need your sword.
My pleasure, fine sir.
The scholar tossed over the ebony stick. JB made the catch and unsheathed the blade to plunge it into the wooden yoke. Grabbing the lion's head handle, he now had some leverage and the yoke moved much easier. He then started flipping switches frantically.
How's the boiler?
Seems undamaged.
Keep me posted on the readings. Dean, in the hold with Millie. Stoke the boiler and keep up the pressure.
Check!
Dean disappeared down the stairs.
Hold ass!
The hail of bullets from Ryan's 50 caliber tore apart something in the trees overhead. Suddenly, Christy and Jack started firing at the shore.
Oh, shit!
Two sec men from the Ville dove for cover and shot back with their long flintlocks. The muzzle loaders booming loudly, the 75 mini-balls slammed into the boat with sledgehammer blows. Then, one of the sec men screamed as a sticky wrapped its tentacles around his face and dragged the man off into the bushes. Caught reloading, the other pulled a knife, but the stickies pounded the Norm with their axes until the screaming stopped. Ryan wasted no bullets until the creatures started shambling for the boat. He'd been hoping they'd be content with the guards. There was only one belt of ammo for the 50 anywhere about. The rest had probably blown overboard when the Firebird hit. Unfortunately, the stickies were attracted to noise and fire like moths to flame. The more the companions fought, the more the muties wanted them. The scent of the fire was beginning to taint the air as Ryan cut the abominations apart. The waterfall was making it impossible to hear any movements, so the man followed his instincts and sprayed half of the remaining ammo around them in a full circle.
Reverse gear!
The props spun wildly behind the gunboat, churning the water into froth. Then the craft jerked backward and started chugging across the lagoon. Switching gears, the PT headed along the shallow runoff water until reaching the harbor and then leaping ahead with renewed speed. More stickies rushed from the bushes, chasing after the departing vessel, only to flounder in the deep water and drown as they tried to reach the Norms on board. Ahead of the companions, the sea battle raged on. Four PTs were darting around the last two pirate ships, weapons chattering steadily. The cannons from the Ville sounded now and then, but the fighting crafts were beyond their limited range. Taking a piece of shirt from a torso of dead sailor jammed under the port cannon, Ryan wrapped the cloth around his aching palm. It slowed the flow of blood. Good enough for now.
Now what? We're mobile, but in a bottleneck. Use the pass and we're sitting ducks for those wall cannons.
Hook the pass.
Ryan dug in a pocket with his uninjured hand and extended his butane lighter. He flicked it once to check the flame, then headed for the undamaged Firebird pod.
We're going straight through the coral reef breakers. And at full speed.
God damn this shit.
Giles stumped along the Gibraltar's smoky deck, trying not to trip over the bodies. Only two ships of the pirate fleet were still floating. The rest were sinking or burning. The other vessel, whatever its name was, had ceased firing its cannons once the mainsail caught fire and fell to the deck, smothering the crew. Many had tried to cut their way free, but nobody escaped from the burning canvas. Now there was only Giles and the Gibraltar. The rest of the swabs on board the flagship had been aced by a Firebird that flew over and exploded in the air, the shrapnel chilling everybody on deck. Only he had survived, the mast shielding him from the deadly blast.
The last pirate on the last ship. Fuck.
The PTs were still circling the dead ships, firing bursts from those big rapid fires. But soon even those idiots would realize nobody was shooting back. They'd start coming on board for a wreck. With blasters in one hand and slave chains in the other. No way Giles would ever let others do to him what he did so often to his prisoners. Death first. Moving among the corpses, the pirate took a knife from a dead man, a gourd of wine and water, a machete, and finally a revolver and three live rounds from Red Blade's still hands. Or he thought it was Red Blade. It was hard to tell without a head on the body. Well armed, Giles headed for the hatchway. He'd grab some food in the galley, then go hide in the bilge with the rats. Back on the Delta Blue, there had been secret places on the ship where a man could hide from the most ruthless search. Awkwardly thumping down the companionway with his cane, Giles knew it would be the same again here. He'd stay out of sight for weeks if necessary, feeding off the rats until the time was right, then escape from under the very nose of the Lord Bastard himself. Afterward, he'd steal a ship and find those bastard outlanders again to finally get his revenge. This was far from over. As the companions raced across the harbor in the damaged PT boat, their speed steadily increased until the craft was skimming across the water, going from wave to wave, practically flying. Standing near the Firebird pod, Ryan noted that the pirate ships were oddly quiet, the Ville too. Only the PDs were still darting about, shooting their machine guns and launching Firebirds. The Deathlands warrior watched as a tall man shouted orders while he fired a hand cannon into the sea, wounding the pirate being eaten by the sharks. He had to be the commander of the Lord Baron's armada. There would be no mercy or deals with a cold heart like that. Best to chill the man, first chance he came under the Stier's crosshairs.
50 yards!
Okay!
Ryan aimed the pod at the water ahead of the bouncing vessel, threw a rock to lock it in position, and stood clear. Joining Ryan by the port cannon, Christy felt a strange crawling sensation in her mind, and turned fast, staring at the rockets. She could have sworn somebody whispered to her, asking a question too soft to hear. Her skin crawled at the memory of the unnatural feeling, and her animated hair coiled tightly in reaction to her agitated state.
Hold her steady!
Ryan kept a firm grip on the cannon with his good hand. The other was tucked into his shirt, the throbbing almost too painful to ignore. He'd been wrong. He should have let Mildred stitch it shut in the fields. J.B. yelled an answer, but it was lost in the rustling launch of the first rocket. The Firebird shot ahead of the craft. It knifed into the ocean, detonating underwater. Another launched, then a third, the blasts churning the sea with their detonations as the boat raced for the coral reef.
Slow, J.B.!
Another Firebird launched.
Only four left! Too fast!
I know!
J.B. wiggled the sword back and forth, making the speeding boat fishtail, its velocity decreasing imperceptibly.